was some hotel on the airport there at DFW. And on Tuesday night, one of our speaker was Hal Lindsey, 31 years ago. And he gave a talk on something. I have no idea what it was about. And then everybody started asking him questions about what's going on now, current events and all this kind of stuff. And I think we ran over time or something that night, you know, people asking that. So starting 30 years ago, a year after that, we started having current events night on Tuesday night. That's how it got started. See, it just evolved into this. And about 17 years ago, we were doing that over at that other hotel across the way, and Bill was here, and I was standing in the back, and he was standing in the back, and we were talking, and I said, Bill, why don't you go up there and say what you said to me or something? I don't know. Is that? And he went up there and started answering questions, and he's been here ever since on Tuesday nights because he's been a White House correspondent up until recently, and he used to live up in that area. And his beautiful wife went home to be with the Lord a while back, so he came back to Dallas. And so he wrote a book called Eye to Eye, Facing the Consequences of Dividing Israel. And it's gone through many iterations. It's up to 575 pages. And I think he's going to tell you a little bit about it. And then he authored Obama's Legacy in 2016. That was a fun thing. But without further ado, we're going to have him go for probably an hour and 15 minutes, have a 15-minute break, and then we'll go to the end. Sometimes we go to 10 o'clock, but some of you people start fading away by then. And there's plenty of time toward the end to ask questions. So if you have a question or something, make a note of that, and he'll be able to answer that. And my job is to make snide remarks to him during his talk. So you can...
He's very good at it.
Yeah, you can take over, Bill.
Thank you, Tommy. Thank you, Tommy. What a treat. Tommy, sometimes right in the middle of a thought, he'll ask me a question as I'm thinking, and, oh, my gosh, Tommy, could you wait just a little bit? So we've had fun over the years teasing him because you never know when something's going to come out, but it's usually profound. So, Tommy, thanks again. What a pleasure to be here. And, oh, gosh, we're living in amazing days. You all know this. Most incredibly biblically significant days in our time. I've been doing this for 26 years, and there are so many things taking place now. Almost any one of the subjects I hit tonight, I could do an hour, hour and a half on just by itself. So what I'll attempt to do is show you some things that you're aware of, try to connect some dots and some issues, and give you an idea of some of the areas of greatest concern. And the great thing about an event like this, you'll be able to connect a lot of dots through this 2.5 days here. So first of all, for those not familiar, my book, Eye to Eye, Facing the Consequences of Dividing Israel, is in its 35th printing. And the focus is what happens in the United States when we apply pressure on Israel to divide their covenant land. And the greater the pressure on Israel, the greater the corresponding catastrophe. It goes all the way back to the perfect storm in 1991, 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, on and on and on. So all these hurricanes and major disasters are very significant. They're the biggest in U.S. history. You can go down the list of the top 40 hurricanes, five of the seven largest tornado outbreaks, two of the largest terror events. They all had this connection to what we were doing with Israel at the time, just like Purina and Ian a couple weeks ago. So I don't know. I was talking to my friend Bill Salas one day. We were up in a conference in St. Louis, and I said, you know, Bill, it's so hard sometimes to see the aftermath of some of these major tornadoes, major hurricanes, 9/11. And I said, you know, I've been there before some of these events and after these events. And, I, you know, it's just, and then the fact that I've noticed, too, the greater the pressure on Israel to divide a covenant land, or in other words, create an Arab state in Judea and Samaria, the greater the corresponding catastrophe. It was interesting that Bill said, how else is God going to get people's attention? You could feel the collective fury or wrath when the thought of putting an Arab state in the biblical heartland of Israel, Judea and Samaria. And I've seen hurricanes go back to the ocean, Hurricane Ophelia and Hurricane Earl, when two presidents, Bush in 2005 and then Obama in 2010, said we will not pressure Israel to do what they do not want to do. And Ophelia was about to hit the Outer Banks in North Carolina, went right to the ocean. Or Hurricane Earl, the size of Texas, heading toward the Washington, D.C., Virginia, Washington, D.C., when Obama had Netanyahu and Abbas and Abdullah and Mubarak at the White House. It was like a monster storm. And then the next day on September 2, he said, we will not pressure Israel or the Palestinians to do what they don't want to do. And that storm went from a 5 to 2 and went right back to the ocean. It's, you know, I've watched this for so many years. I'm very sensitive to these events and sensitive when something, usually I see something happen before, but sometimes I go, there had to be something. Like Hurricane Harvey down in Houston. When Hurricane Harvey, it was a remnant of a storm. This was Trump's first major disaster. I think August 2017, and I thought, whoa, this went from a remnant to a monster storm, and the second costliest event in U.S. history. So I did some homework through my Arab press contacts and found out that Kushner had been in Doha, Qatar, he'd been in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, he'd been in Abu Dhabi, meeting with the Emirates leaders, he was in Egypt, then he was in Jordan. And basically saying Israel's ready to give up the covenant land. Are you guys ready to play ball? Are you guys ready to do a peace deal? And that's what it, I mean, completely, Hurricane Harvey completely mapped his time in the Middle East. So so I've documented this, and I have four letters in the eye-to-eye. I told President Bush twice in letters before 9/11 that if, you know, you force Israel to divide their land, there will be consequences. And 17 days before 9/11, George Bush was working with King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia on what was going to be the most comprehensive address ever given by an American president to the UN. The work was done on 9/10, according to the Washington Post. George W. was going to call for two states, something his dad or Clinton would never have done. They finished the work on 9/10, and Bondar was celebrating in his mansion in McLean, Virginia. And he went from celebration to absolute horror the next day when 15 of the 19 terrorists were Saudis. So, so I've documented that for the, the purpose of showing people, including leaders, and these have happened in Europe as well, when they have stepped in because of a U.S. presidential election. So it happens there, Berlin and Paris, flooding of Paris during a peace conference. The entire German rail system was shut down in January of 2007 when Condoleezza Rice is sitting with Merkel calling on Israel to give up the land, and the winds were so ferocious in Germany it shut the entire German rail system down. And then and then when she went over to the UK with Tony Blair, same thing, shut down the channel, hurricane force winds. You know, it just all gets back to the atmospheric reaction of the God of Israel when you talk about the possibility of creating an Arab state. Reveal Obama's legacy. You know, having been at the White House for 20 years, I really felt compelled to write something. And, you know, having been there, the Lord really put my heart. Seven chapters, the eighth chapter, give him a chance to repent. And, you know, I think the repentance chapters probably kept me out of harm's way. But it's a book that even a lot of my friends have said you did not have a bone to pick. You were very fair. You told it like it was. In a lot of ways, you used his words, and we can see that when you use his words. I mean, for us that know the Bible and the Scriptures, they could see it. So I just had to do that. And I, you know, the opening chapter, I mean, the opening scripture is Isaiah 5:20. Woe to those that call evil good and good evil. And that's pretty much the Obama's 8 years in office and stuff that we're paying, living through today. The revealed has to do with Luke 12:2, that God will reveal all that is hidden. So that's where it came up with the title. But there were a lot happened. And I, even on the front of our website at watch.org, I tell people, you know, we'll never get over a lot of the things that happened during Obama's time in office. We put out a weekly news report every Friday. It's a summary of world news that happened that week that's biblically relevant. And it's, as I said earlier, it's getting hard to stay up with everything right now, with everything happening so fast. I think the uniqueness about this time is the we have a lot of catalysts, and I'll hit some of these tonight. They're doing things that we it's hard to even follow the pattern. You can see the pattern of these activities, but there's so many things that are playing off each other, and but I'll get into that shortly. I needed to frame, this is eye-to-eye material, but I wanted to frame this because we've had two events in the last 20 years or 21 years that have affected every man, woman, and child in this room, our country, and in many ways the world. That is the 9/11 terrorism events that led to the war on terror, and also the coronavirus pandemic. These both have a connection to what we were doing. I mentioned 9/11. Two largest catastrophes in U.S. history corresponded to direct White House role in establishing Arab state in Judea and Samaria. And 9/11, Bush Abdullah's two-state plan and 9/11-2001, and then Trump-Kushner Peace to Prosperity Plan 1-28-2020. These two events have cost the United States $15 trillion and growing for the war on terror, which was $6.4 trillion, and six major coronavirus bills, $5.3 trillion, and the Federal Reserve dispersed another $4.0 trillion out of $6.2 trillion. I presented these last year also. These are so foundational. A lot of the things that we're dealing with today in the United States are consequences and after effects of the war on terror and also the coronavirus pandemic. U.S.-Israel final day events have accelerated, and accelerated, I think, even more dramatically after Trump and Netanyahu were together at the White House. On January 28, 2020, Trump's deal of the century was presented with a map at the White House. The plan here was to, even though whether the Palestinians were going to ever approve it or not, a future Palestinian state on 70-80% of Judea and Samaria. But what was different with Trump's plan, he had a map. And when he put his map on, right after he presented on January 28, he put his map on Twitter, and 41 minutes later, we had a 7.7 earthquake or shake the Miami Financial District. And what was interesting about that, it came in at a 7.3, and they bumped it to a 7.7, and I appreciate the numbers. It's very significant. Usually, they come in hot, and they'll drop it like 7.3 would be a 6.9, 6.5, 6.0. But this came in at a 7.3, and they bumped it to 7.7. 41 minutes after Trump put his map on Twitter for, at that time, 78 million followers. He got up to 88. So that was significant. And the map, and I talked to some of the administration officials, they said, well, you know, they never really thought the Palestinians would fulfill the agreement anyhow. So, you know, sure, they talk about a future Palestinian state, but, you know, it's not that big a deal. Well, it is that big a deal because it continues. Well, and I wrote another commentary. Life in America before January 28th, there was great favor for Donald Trump. He did more for Israel than all presidents combined. Nothing close to moving the embassy, getting out of the Iran nuke deal, Israel's sovereign rights to the Golan Heights. You know, the fact that the settlement communities, according to Pompeo, are not illegal according to the San Remo Agreement of 1920. Standing up for Israel at the International Criminal Court, stop funding the Palestinians, UNRWA, closing the Palestinian office in Washington, D.C., on and on. And he had Christian Zionists in place. Mike Pence, Mike Pompeo, Nikki Haley, very strong Christians, very pro-Israel. Nikki Haley was a tremendous ambassador. Secretary of State Pompeo was very bold about his faith throughout the Middle East. Pence had been a pro-Israel person for a long time. So he had the Zionists. And then and Ambassador Friedman is a Hebrew-speaking U.S. ambassador to Israel. Hebrew-speaking. I mean, he can speak Hebrew. He knows this, he knows the scriptures about the land. And just an unusual. Trump had an unusual team. But when he came out with the plan, my commentary, life before January 28, and life after, when the Trump-Kushner plan, this is Kushner, the son-in-law, things changed dramatically leading up to the November election. What was also interesting, right after Trump introduced his peace plan, the international community all emphasized their plan. Boris Johnson, Macron, Merkel, head of the EU, Organization of Islamic States, UN officials, and also the Arab League, they all said, no, we have our plan. That's the UN resolution 242338. Those were the resolutions that had been on the books for quite a while. So within 24 to 48 hours, almost every major leader established their position on the land of Israel. Peter Navarro that afternoon on January 28th attempted to convince Fauci and Azar and the White House officials that this coronavirus is going to be a big problem. And they kind of laughed him off. You could see Fauci laugh him off and other people and Azar and Mulvaney. And they and Navarro was just really mad. He said, no, we got a serious problem. We need to shut the border to China and consider shutting the border to Europe. They laughed him off, as they said, and then he said, okay, I'm going to put a memo together. He said, this could cost us, it's going to affect 100 million Americans. There's a possibility of 1 to 2 million Americans dying, and this will cost us $3.8 trillion. This is what Navarro wrote on January 29, the day after. And he was very accurate, which is, you know, Peter Navarro has his own way of communicating, but I tell you, the guy was absolutely right, as he has been with a lot of other things. So, this is where I just mentioned the talk about the 100 million Americans and the 1 to 2 million souls lost. And then announced the formation of the task force, and they started taking it really serious. What was interesting about this, right after all these leaders established their position on the land, 7 weeks later, we had 3 billion people in lockdown around the globe. We never had anything like that, ever. It definitely appears to be an eye-to-eye connection. Then the Abraham Accords was signed September 15, 2020, at the White House. And what's interesting about, you know, a lot of times when you have a major Israel event, you'll see in a corner they'll have the hurricane or the tornado or the earthquake, or even a terror event. But here you have Netanyahu showing up at the White House, and then you have Hurricane Sally in the top corner, because Hurricane Sally was about ready to come ashore at the time of the signing. And eventually did that night and then the next day. One of my readers from Long Island, New York, wrote and said, Sally is a derivative of the Hebrew name Sarah. So in other words, we had Hurricane Sarah slamming into the southern Gulf Coast right after the Abraham Accords was signed. That could have been any one of our names. It was precise. And the talk was the Abraham Accords is Abraham land. It's for all, this land is for all descendants of Abraham. The Lutheran Church, ELCA, had written that before. And I took them on, and they eventually took that website down. They were passing resolutions chastising Israel, saying that that land's for all descendants. And I gave them a bunch of scriptures from the Old Testament and the New Testament, and they took that site down. So that's our activist role. But I was thankful to say that. Here's the signing. The leader on the left is from the from Bahrain, and then Netanyahu, obviously, and Trump, and then the leader from the Emirates. What also is interesting is 72 hours after the signing of the agreement, Israel goes into a national lockdown for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot. 72 hours after the signing. Part of the reason for the signing, and even when I interviewed Ambassador Friedman, part of the reason for the signing is it was going to bring billions of dollars into Israel. Over the first couple of years, they predicted $1 to $2 billion in new trade with the Emirates, especially the United Arab Emirates. They have a $950 billion sovereign fund. I mean, they have so much wealth. But this event cost Israel five billion shekels. So about probably around $1.5 billion. So all that money they were going to gain the first 2 years, it was wiped out because Israel was in a total lockdown for 3 weeks. The Abraham Accords, on the surface it sounds good, but this isn't a peace deal. This is a normalization deal. This is a business deal. It sounds great. I know Pompeo and others were still continuing to lobby him and Friedman. They all put a lot of time into it. But it's not that big a deal. Israel already had these relations. Yes, it's favorable to see Arabs and Israelis getting along. But the irony is because of Obama's Iran deal, they felt compelled to be even closer with Israel because of concerns for their own defense. So, yes. But with the concern about the Abraham Accords, it stopped the extended sovereignty to 134 Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria. It continued the two-state false narrative. It continued the UN resolutions 242, 338, and the resolution which calls for Israel to give back land in the 1967 lines was swapped. And Division of Jerusalem was maintained. And America mentions the Arab Peace Plan of 2002. The Abrahamic covenant and land covenant in Genesis 17 says it's only to Isaac and it's his seed. The land is given to Abraham and Isaac. The land is an everlasting possession. Israel's land is not to be sold or exchanged. Isaac and his seed is their heir, not Ishmael. So we have the scriptures. And when I interviewed Ambassador Friedman, I mentioned, Ambassador Friedman, the covenant... this was in June at the Jerusalem prayer breakfast in Jerusalem. I interviewed him. I said, the leaders from the Middle East that signed the Abraham Accord were at the UN 2 weeks after that saying that they would have never done this deal if you hadn't stopped, or especially Kushner, stopped the extension of sovereignty to those Jewish communities. And every single Arab leader that spoke at the UN mentioned that as well. The accord was agreed to by these countries because it stopped the extension of sovereignty to Israel's rightful land. Now I'll shift a little bit into the U.S. midterm election, November 8. I wrote this on November 4, and I've been in Brazil. I'll get into that shortly. Praying what happened with the Brazilian vote won't happen in the U.S., while millions of Republicans were working hard to get out the vote, billions of dollars was being spent, while the voting machine fraudsters were planning their electronic election manipulation. I thought about that. It came to me strongly, like that's the perspective I believe the Lord gave me, that even to the extent that they're getting very sophisticated, and you can't even track some of the things they're doing. I saw the Republicans and the excitement and the precinct committee chair and getting out the vote throughout the country, Christians getting out the vote, but then you got the machine guys over here doing their thing. I just sense there's something to that. So vote fraud has been successful in two of the largest countries in the world, the United States and Brazil. As I was working, as I was in Brazil, and then watching the U.S. election, then I was in Israel the night of the election, I thought to myself, wow, everybody's talking about a red wave. I mean, this is the big deal. I mean, the red wave is what everybody's focused on. I mean, even the Democrats, even their mainstream media, the Republicans thought we've got a red wave coming. Very few people thought that. Most people thought that was going to happen. It didn't happen. And when I was thinking about a red wave, the issue for me was, we got a blood moon over America on the day of election? We think we're going to have a red wave? This is incompatible or inconsistent with the blood moons. They're omens of war, conflict, division. And so when I became familiar a few weeks out, I go, you know, I hope we have a red wave, but we got a blood moon over New York and Washington, D.C. and the United States on the day of election? Not the next day or a week later. So I thought that was very, very significant. It was us being shown. Red wave didn't happen. Why? We have a situation here. We have an unpopular president. How did somebody as unpopular as Biden do so well in the midterm elections? Successful midterm were Clinton. I can't say it was successful. Clinton lost 52 House seats and 8 Senate seats in his midterm election. Bush lost 30 House seats and 6 Senate seats. Obama lost 63 House seats, 6 Senate seats. Trump lost 40 House seats and gained 2 Senate seats. Huge losses. How could this have happened? You know, voting machine manipulation, sophisticated. Is it becoming stealth? Was the Civil War spared? This is probably, I was talking to some friends of mine, probably the only good thing about the red wave not happening was the Civil War was spared. Because that's what the mainstream media and the social networks are playing, is this, we got a Civil War coming. And then you have Clinton, Obama, Biden saying the future of American democracy is at risk because of possible major Republican victory. I mean, this is right before the election, the Obamas and Clintons saying this. Mainstream media commentators, especially MSNBC and CNN, called Republican fascist. Democrats thought they could win with abortion, LGBTQ, and critical race theory. Polls showed those issues were low in the voters' mind, but it was probably just enough to help in some close races. But I think what's so significant is the Clintons, Obamas, and even Biden, right before the election, talked about if the Republicans win this big, the end of democracy. Absurdity. But that's, that says a lot, too, about the manipulation of the race. Today's Democratic Party. My mother was former president of the Democratic Woman of Arizona. She was a conservative Democrat. She was not a Hillary Clinton backer or an Obama backer. And the party that she was part of, the Conservative Democratic Party, especially in the South, does not exist any longer. It's progressive and it's activist. We have a party of abortion, LGBTQ agenda and grooming of young people, pathetic, same-sex marriage, gender confusion, critical race theory, lawlessness, climate control, lunacy, open borders, fiscal irresponsibility, absurd coronavirus vaccination requirements and lockdowns, allowing Chinese influence and speaking, divisive rhetoric, and much more. This is, sadly, the Democratic Party of today. I did a commentary in the 2020 election. There's 34 parts of the Democratic platform that are in direct opposition to the Scriptures. And furthermore, we're a constitutional republic, not a democracy. Now, with this election over, I looked yesterday. The Republicans have 222 seats in the House. A majority would have been required 218. And They have 51, Democrats have 51 seats. Herschel Walker, I wish he'd have just stayed in football, but I like Herschel, but can't Georgia come up with a better candidate? I'm afraid, I'm afraid he's not going to pull it off, but that's important. I mean, Tim Scott, Senator of South Carolina, said the one-person majority that we lost, we had a 50-50 Senate in the last term, and Harris broke 26 tiebreakers. And he said the fact that if we'd have just had one more conservative in the Senate, it would have kept us from $4 trillion worth of new federal debt. $4 trillion. I mean, that's just absolutely significant. So anyhow, focus now is on the 2024 election. Trump factor, fatigue and exhaustion. I mean, a lot of us appreciate what Trump has done. He has not had a good day. He has not had an easy day from the day he was elected, even before that. He accomplished a lot, amazingly effective accomplishing a lot. this is going to be interesting in this context. Is Trump's base is very loyal. I talked to conferences around the country. A lot of people appreciated Bush as a Christian conservative, but Trump's base is loyal. I was out in the middle of the Arizona desert near Florence, Arizona, and I think it was late January. There was 45,000 people out there, horrible wind, cold weather, and no one left the whole day until Trump got there that night. I mean, it's extraordinary. But see, Trump is the representative of people that have never had a voice. A lot of us. We haven't had a voice. We haven't had an alpha male in the office that would take on some of these issues. We had a safe world. I mean, look at the Middle East and around the world. Despite his style, he went to NATO. I was there with him in the White House press corps at NATO in 2017 at a $1.2 billion new building that was being celebrated. And Trump went up there, typical Trump style, said it is not fair for the American taxpayer to being paying the fair share of this building. We have 24 of 28 states not fulfilling their NATO requirements, and the American taxpayer should not be paying for buildings like this. Classic. But, he's just done extraordinary things. It'll be like Reagan however long the Lord waits for us, however long before he returns, is he's going to go down as a very good president. In 4 years, what he accomplished, and especially the 200 judges. That was so important on so many fronts. So we have a 2024 race perspective. We have House investigations. They're getting ready. Jim Jordan's going to be the head of the Judiciary Committee. We don't have a majority in the Senate, unfortunately, but we do in the House. There is going to be some major, major investigations. And we're going to see the vitriol of the Democrats on those committees. It's going to be disgusting. But it's going to happen. Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, I mean, there's going to be a lot that comes out. I mean, it's just the bottom line. They're ready. We have some congressmen that are on this. Fauci just went through a 6 or 7 hour deposition with the Attorney General of Missouri. I haven't read it yet, but I'm sure there was some good content in there because the Attorney General of Missouri really knows his business. Attorney General Merrick Garland, he'll be brought up. Why haven't you done? What about your border security? What about these other things? Same for Biden. I mean, Biden, there's going to be responsibility for our border, especially here in Texas. And then FBI Director Christopher Wray, he had some pretty tough hearing a few months ago. Round one, the Republicans did a good job, but they were waiting for round two, and then the Democrats released him so he didn't have to go through round two because they had to catch a plane, government plane. But there's going to be a lot of questions for him going forward. So the mainstream media is going to do everything they can to stir up as much political division as they can leading up to the midterm election. Oops, excuse me. Brazil and South America. I was in Brazil for the Jerusalem prayer breakfast 2 days before the election, and Brazil is the globalist prize. Incredible resources, as goes Brazil, as goes South America. I mean, Brazil is enormous. Brazil is 10% larger than our continental 48 states. It is a big country. And it's the 12th largest economy in the world. Enormous resources, number one in soybean, exporter, fertile soil, rare earth minerals that China's after, oil and gas, offshore, lumber, and much more. This is a very, very wealthy country, and this is a global prize. Lula was just recently applauded like a rock star at the climate control conference in Egypt a few weeks ago. Biden's administration had a real big role in this. They were setting it up in the event that Bolsonaro challenged the election. So we have our national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, meeting with Bolsonaro to ensure election integrity. Then we had the CIA chief who told Bolsonaro government not to mess with Brazil elections May 5 this year. Should stop casting doubt. President Bolsonaro should stop casting doubt on his country's voting system ahead of the October election. U.S. State Department, May 22nd. It's important that the Brazilians have confidence in their electoral system, a U.S. State Department official said in a statement when asked for comments. The Brazilians and the institutions need to create a free, fair, and transparent election. Biden and Bolsonaro to meet for their first meeting at the Summit of the Americas, amid election worries. And then, this is Foreign Policy Magazine, wrote that top officials, this is their October 30th magazine, the top officials from the White House, Defense Department, State Department, and even the CIA have held meetings with Brazilian officials to try to head off any efforts of Bolsonaro to subvert the results. Unbelievable. What are we doing down there? You know? I won't go into detail, but I had the opportunity to spend 1 hour with President Bolsonaro two Sundays ago. And I can't go into all detail right now, but his pastor is a friend. And so is his wife, Mrs. Bolsonaro, his pastor, and a friend of mine, and also the translator. And we talked for about 1 hour. We talked about U.S. political situation. We talked about the movement of the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. We talked about, and he was concerned because at that time he told me that Colombia and Argentina and Chile were offering to bring in troops if there was a counter to the election. And I said, well, President Bolsonaro, your son's a friend of Mike Lindell, and he spent $25 million plus, maybe as high as $40 now, and nothing happened. I'm afraid the same thing's going to happen here. The globalists want your country. They want America. So it was a great great meeting, great man, a great man of faith. Here's Mrs. Bolsonaro. Loved, I mean, she wore this T-shirt when she voted. I mean, she just loves Israel. She loves Jesus. You know, pray for God bless Brazil, God bless Israel. And we prayed with her. Here I am with her. This is two nights before the election, or actually one night. We prayed the night of the 28th, end of the 29th. The election was on the 30th. But she just loves Jesus. She's done more to open the doors throughout Brazil for Christians, for ministries. She just, she is tremendous. And I think that's where her heartache was, the fact that they weren't going to be in a position of influence, herself or her husband, as Christians. The currency is stable down there. They had a surplus of people being pulled out of poverty. It was a great 4 years. And it was very similar to what Trump went through. He was under attack from the beginning. And then the Supreme Court let Lula out of prison. Unfortunately, the Supreme Court down there is not too good. So anyhow, it was interesting because David Friedman, put a tweet up not even 18 hours after the election. He said Bolsonaro should have kept his promise to move Brazil's Israeli embassy to Jerusalem. I think, based on conversations with Brazilian leaders, it would have made a difference in the outcome. So I was on the way back to Israel. I was on the way to Israel, and I told my friend Albert Vexler, who started the prayer breakfast. I said, "Albert, let's see if we can meet with David Friedman and find out who he was talking about." So we were able to get a meeting. So we spent a half an hour with Ambassador Friedman, and we asked him, who were the Brazilian leaders? He said the Brazilian leaders were pastors. Excuse me. Pastors. And he told them, Ambassador Friedman told the pastors, that President Trump was amazed every time he spoke across the country. When he talked about moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, the applause was much greater than anything else he did. He was amazed at the appreciation of the fact he moved the embassy. And, President Bolsonaro said, you should talk, you should do the same. Talk to President Bolsonaro and encourage him, because he said he'd do it. Encourage him to do it. So I asked President Bolsonaro, you know, is it still possible to do it? He said, well, first of all, it's really pretty simple to do. I had it ready to go. I talked to five Arab leaders, even Prince Salman from Saudi Arabia. They said, that's your business. You can do what you want to do. And they were ready to do it, and then coronavirus hit. And that stopped the movement. And then I said, well, just why don't you do it now before you leave? Even if he reverses it, try it. He says, I can't add any more stress. I can't risk a possible terror event. I can't risk these militaries that want to come in. I just can't risk it. So it probably won't happen. He's got a couple more weeks. January 1st, he'll be officially out of office. But that was interesting because, you know, that's part of the blessing. You know, if he had done it, part of the reason he didn't, I understand, is the Arabs buy about $5 billion worth of halal meat from Brazil a year, and they threaten to cancel that. But I'm sure there was other reasons. But he said it was all ready to go, and then coronavirus happened. Okay, voting equipment. This is something we're all really concerned about here in the United States. And this is Joseph Stalin's comments. I consider it completely unimportant who in the party will vote or how. But what is extraordinarily important is this. Who will count the votes? And how? And why are the friends of Obama and Soros major investors, board members, and directors of voting equipment companies? Lord Mark Malik Brown was chairman of the Smartmatic board from 2014 to 2020. Smartmatic was the voting machine company used in Venezuela that helped bring Maduro, very suspect. President Bolsonaro tried to get rid of it, but the Supreme Court and the judicial wouldn't allow him to come in with another equipment. He just wanted to get rid of Smartmatic because of the history in South America. So we weren't able to do that. And then Malik Brown is connected to George Soros through the Open Society Foundation, an organization that gives grants to civil society organizations around the world. Malik Brown now serves on the Open Society Global Board. He's also now the president. He left right after the November 2020 election to become president of Soros' Open Society. They're very close. Why are additional friends? Peter Neffinger was Secretary of Transportation for Obama. Neffinger is now the chairman of the board of Smartmatic. And Neffinger was the TSA security director under Obama. And Neffinger was appointed to be on Biden's transition team in November 2020. It almost like possibly a conflict of interest. Yeah, maybe, maybe not. But the fact is, here is a board member of Smartmatic that we heard Cindy Powell and others talk about. I don't know how involved they were, Dominion was. But here we have Neffinger, who was appointed to be on the transition team of Biden right after that questionable election. Dominion Voting Systems. Obama's EU ambassador, William Kennard, is executive board member of Staple Street Capital, major shareholders in Dominion Voting Systems. Dominion was acquired by the management team in Staple Street Capital in 2018. So, in other words, the first ever U.S. ambassador to the EU, Obama's, is executive board member of Staple Street Capital, which is a major shareholder in Dominion. I saw this slide today. The 92-year-old philanthropist, multi-million-dollar efforts promoting his bizarre open society agenda, encompasses some of the most radical leftist ideas on abortion, Marxism, or Marxist economics, anti-Americanism, defunding the police, environmental extremists, and LGBT fanaticism. 253, and I've seen this in Washington and other places, 253 groups, media groups, influencers in the global media get money from Soros. And it's a lot. Another area of concern that we have today is truth and common sense under attack, as well as Judeo-Christian values. We have rebellion and accusations. The other side accuses us of a lot of things. If you want to know what they're doing, look at what they're accusing us of. That's what they're doing. Hate speech versus freedom of speech. Okay, well, we can't get rid of freedom of speech. Well, we'll just call hate speech. Anything anti-LGBTQ, anything anti-Islam, hate speech. And then you get the social networks and the mainstream media. I mean, I don't know really of any Republican leader that's willing to even talk about LGBT in a frank way because of the intimidation of the social networks and mainstream media. 80% of college campuses, I spoke to Republican interns at the RNC about 4 years ago, and one from University of Wisconsin, University of Minnesota, University of Pennsylvania, and University of Virginia. Every one of those campuses, 75-80% of those campuses vote for Democrats, voted for Clinton. They don't want to hear a conservative Christian voice in their campuses. They'll either protest the event, and usually they protest so much they cancel the event, so it never happens. I want to know where they're coming from, just like you do, but they don't want to know where we're coming from. They have no interest in our thinking. None. And they say Christians are bigot and we're intolerant. No, you're intolerant. And some of this thinking, nutcase. I mean, that's when I was putting this PowerPoint slide together, I thought, some of the stuff that they're doing and saying is crazy. Where does this come from? But I think, and I heard my former pastor, Gary Hamrick in Virginia, do a message on this last weekend. Truth and common sense are under attack. Truth and common sense. We saw a building when the social networks were doing everything they could to reframe the debate or reframe everything to their liking. How do you have a president of the United States that had 88 million followers on Twitter 48 hours after Michelle Obama calls for Facebook and Twitter to dump Trump? They did. Unbelievable. This is a true battle. And, if truth and common sense are attacked, then that's our Judeo-Christian values that lead us to truth. And the late Charles Krauthammer said in the Benghazi hearings a few years back, before he passed away, that we're at a point now where truth does not matter. And we're seeing that, especially in the political debate. I mean, there's seven or eight things that if these had been, there's seven or eight things right now that the Democrats have done, whether it's the vaccines, whether it's Hunter Biden, whether it's the border, on and on. If any one of those had been done by Trump, every one of those would have been a major issue. But if Democrats do, they get away with it. And that just empowers them more. The other problem is Republicans don't operate very well in a minority. Democrats work real well in the minority because they use the mainstream media and the social networks very effectively. But, I mean, we saw the last 2 years somewhat neutered Republican Party in the House and Senate do nothing but just sit there like deer's eyes in headlights. And, unfortunately, we still have Mitch McConnell in there. We haven't been able to move him out or find someone more capable. But, anyhow, that's a real battle. LGBTQ disruption. You all probably have seen this more than, I mean, all of us are probably more sensitive to this than anybody. There's nothing more divisive. They're after the children. When you think Disney protests the fact that you can't give transgender and really what it usually is LGBT education to kindergarten to third grade, are you serious? Well, they are. And the social networks and the mainstream media. Obama had, I wrote about this in my book on Obama, he had 250 high-profile LGBT activists in every cabinet in Washington, every major. And what they did when they were out of office, they moved into positions of influence in media and Fortune 100, even Fortune 500 companies, and changed the narrative and the language on LGBTQ. And that's what we're seeing today. These are Obama activists and others that are in positions of influence. And it's unbelievable. But it's a major factor in something. And we're under judgment for it because of it. Another issue that I'm watching right now that's kind of building is Christians against Christian nationalism. Michelle Obama, Tony Perkins, and Pastor Gary Hamrick did a hour-and-a-half presentation on this recently. Christian nationalism is basically wanting Judeo-Christian values back in our country. But what the mainstream media has done is they have brought on activists within liberal churches or liberal theologians that are bashing Christian nationalism, saying that they don't understand it. It's like even Wikipedia, which I found out today that Soros has money in Wikipedia. But anyhow, this is a pretty good explanation. Christian nationalism is Christianity-affiliated religious nationalism. Christian nationalists' primary focus is on internal politics, such as passing laws that reflect their view of Christianity and its role in political and social life. In countries with a state church, Christian nationalist is seeking to preserve the status of the Christian state, or the anti-establishmentarian position. Christian nationalists support the presence of Christian symbols, statuary in the public square, as well as state patronage for the display of religion, such as school prayer, exhibition and nativity scenes, Christmas tide and Christian cross and Good Friday. Well, this is great. Why shouldn't we? But this bothers them. And it bothers the liberal theologians that the mainstream media uses. It's just unbelievable. Books that they're promoting now, the seven deadly sins of white Christian nationalism. The new book launch, The Psychology of Christian Nationalism. It's just, can't believe it, but it's happening. And a lot of these guys are just, liberal theologian intellectuals, which is really a scary combination of words, but that's what they are. And then the Phillips Theological Seminary, the United States is not God's chosen nation. The United States is a nation and not a church. So, read the Constitution. Find out about our Judeo-Christian biblical values. But they don't want that. I mean, this is all alternative thinking. So anyhow, we'll jump over to Ezekiel 38 and 39. A lot of us are watching that very carefully. This Ukraine, the trigger. It's really interesting how this has evolved. But anyhow, yesterday the Ukraine destroys two Russian nuclear bombers in airport bombings. And Russian military airfields hit by explosions. And I didn't get the slide in here in time, but a couple weeks ago, Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2, the Russian pipelines, were sabotaged. And Sam Gattis, who's the former CIA guy, said that could have been the United States, Russia, or China. That's the only three that could have done it. Russia, they do crazy things from time to time. That's a possibility, but I don't think so. China, why? United States, we even heard Biden say in the event of an attack on Ukraine that they would consider that. Vicki Nuland in Capitol Hill said that. And I saw, I haven't confirmed it, but one of Tom Hughes' guys, the guy named Monkey Works, that's his code name, he's in an undisclosed location in Texas, believes that we had some of our Poseidon planes. That's our nuclear sub-busting planes. Nuclear sub-busting. And I saw some, it looked like we had maybe a Poseidon over Nord Stream, one of the Nord Stream pipelines, maybe a couple. I didn't watch the whole thing. I didn't have the time. But, mainstream media has been trying to provoke Biden into a war. We're not there yet, but he's certainly been trying it. But the fascinating thing about, well, first of all, I'll hit this first. Biden was at a summit in Jeddah, the Red Sea coast of Saudi Arabia. This is right after his trip to Israel and the Palestinians. And he was telling Basically, he was begging the Russians before the Ukraine invasion and the Saudis pump more oil. Well, he's the guy that stopped 1 million barrels a day coming in on the Keystone Pipeline. He's the one that hasn't helped with federal leases on public land. He's the guy that's Treasury Secretary has been telling big banks to watch your funding to major oil companies. Having his Secretary Janet Granholm, Energy Secretary, laugh when they talk about drilling more in American soil. It's crazy. I love what Boone Pickens from Texas said a few years ago when Trump was in office. We're sending $500 billion U.S. dollars to the Middle East every year that should be kept in the United States. And I think that pretty much nails it right there. We have the oil. God has blessed this country with oil and natural gas, incredible resources. But this is part of the ESG thing. I'll get toward the end. So anyhow, this didn't go very well for him. Typical Biden Middle East trip. 48 hours after he was there, the Egyptians and Emirates, concerned about Biden, went to Tehran, reopened their embassies, and reestablished relations. Emirates, the Abraham Accord partner, and Egypt. Then the next day, 72 hours after Biden left, Erdogan from Turkey and Putin met in Russia. And they sat down with Khomeini and the president of Iran 72 hours after. And this was another notice through the Biden administration. Here we go. Right there. Very significant photo and meeting. But see, Israel's in a difficult position, but this is what's so interesting about the Ukraine conflict. Israel's in a balancing act between Russia and the West, complicated by Russia's use of Iranian drones. Zelensky blasts Israel, suggesting the Russia-Iran nuclear collusion happened because of Israel. Well, Israel's voted with Ukraine a couple times at the United Nations, and it's infuriated the Russians. One of the foreign ministers of Russia said, okay, fine. You have no right to the sovereignty over the Golan Heights. Our relations with you, Israel, is going to be more complicated. Your opportunity to go in and take out Iranian weapons inside Syria, that's going to be compromised. So it's really been interesting. And when I was in Jerusalem a couple weeks ago, Albert's next-door neighbor is a pastor from the Caucasian Mountains. Some people believe that would be part of the Gog Magog force as well. He was very concerned. He just talked to some friends of his in the Caucasus Mountains, and he said Russia is in a meeting there, meeting with Iran on even closer military cooperation, which is, Gog Magog alignment. I mean, that's one thing that's happening. Zelensky, Israel's neutrality spurred Russia-Iran ties. Putin may help Iran on nukes. Ukraine says Iran help for Russia should push Israel out of a neutral stance. Ukraine says Iran's help for Russia. And Zelensky's trying to get Israel to do more. Well, Israel's wise enough they aren't going to push this any further. And then Iran says it's testing satellite-carrying rockets. U.S. calls move destabilizing. And then U.S. launched warplanes after Iran threatened Saudi Arabia. And a lot of us over the years, for us that know the tension between the Shiites, Muslims, which is 20% of Islam, and the Sunnis, which is 80% of Islam, people that really know the neighborhood say Israel's not the first to be hit by Iranian nuke in Saudi Arabia. So that's got a lot of people in the Middle East, worried. But the fact that we put warplanes up to help Saudi Arabia and even looked like stealth planes. I think that was out of that article. Gantz said Israel doesn't have the production capacity to supply air defense systems to Ukraine. And then Gantz said he expects not Netanyahu to be level-headed about Iran strike. Netanyahu, one of the reasons Netanyahu's back in office right now is 75-80% of Israelis want him to be the prime minister at the time of conflict with Iran, which seems to be coming closely. He has wanted to do something right just before Obama's second term in 2012. He's ready to put the jets in the skies, and the nuclear subs are in the Persian Gulf. And Obama said, look, we know you're about ready to attack Iran. Don't do it. Stop Don't do it now. And we'll put a lot of pressure on Iran after the election if he got reelected. Well, that didn't happen. They cut a bad deal. Iran is preparing to send additional weapons, including ballistic missiles, to Russia to use in the Ukraine. Western officials said on November 1st, Iran is seeking Russia's help to bolster its nuclear program. That's a given, along with North Korea having a close relationship with Iran. Putin's top security official visited Iran on November 9 to seek, as Russia seeks precision weapons, probably the drones, and then Iran and Russia find common ground through Syria and Ukraine wars. And Putin's top security official. Oh, I got that. I guess that's a repeat. Yeah, I'm sorry. Okay, so that's kind of where Ezekiel 38 and 39 are right now. We're all familiar with the pandemic. The coronavirus was a pandemic. We don't know whether it came out of Wuhan labs on purpose or it was an accident. We know it was a biological-oriented weapon. Fortunately, it had a low lethality of less than 1%, where the original coronavirus had a 15%. But we also know that I think the only good thing about the coronavirus is it exposed the globalists, the World Economic Forum, and the Davos guys for what they were doing. We've heard about it, but I mean, it just took the curtain off. It's almost like something out of Wizard of Oz. I mean, it just took the curtain off what they were doing. Well, the scripture is very, very specific about no man might buy or sell unless he has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. And then here's the wisdom. Let him have understanding. Count the number of the beast, for it's the number of a man, and his number is 666. Well, Klaus Schwab, we know a lot more about him now. Klaus has been talking about 50 initiative platforms for public-private cooperation. I heard a quote of his the other day. I didn't get it for this, but it's basically saying now is the opportunity for us to get things in order in the world. And he believes he's the guy. Very proud of this day, seeing the beginning of the crisis. We have won over 200 additional partners who joined us without knowing when they would go to Davos or not. That's countries, 200 countries. It's interesting. Trudeau had a lot to do with Zelensky running for president of the Ukraine. And that meeting took place at Davos during the World Economic Forum. And he said he thinks the time has come to bring people together because we see a degradation of trust in the world, and trust only builds through personal relations. And the World Economic Forum, in a broader sense, is a community of multi-stakeholders, businesses, governments, civil society, young generation to work together. They make everything sound so easy. And I can tell you right now, if it wasn't for the United States, and I have friends, you know, Europe, Christian friends that are watchmen like me in Europe and in Australia, and there are so many of them praying for us and rooting for us because they say, America goes down, we go down too. It's already rough to be a Christian right now in Europe. There's so few. And the Marxist socialists over there, I mean, these people are totally in lockstep with the World Economic Forum. And if it wasn't for the Republicans in the United States, this would just fall into place so simply. But we're going to fight it. We'll do what we can. This is end-time stuff, but we've got an obligation to fight it. The common pass, this is, you know, the digital passports. We heard about this a little bit during the coronavirus, that, you know, basically it will have your flight information, your vaccine information, a lot of other things in the future. But this is, they're trying to get as many people jabbed as possible. And fortunately, I heard today that it looks like the House Democrats came along with the Republicans and they're not going to force mandatory vaccines in the new defense bill on our military. Thank God for that. So this Common Pass, this is the World Economic Project. You see, they're the Commons Project. So this is... you can see where this is going. So then, you know, all your status, your tests, you know, what you've been, you know, your shots, your passport number, all of it into the common pass. This will be the future passport, probably, for the most part. And global entry, facial recognition, this is happening so quick. Well, I use global entry, and it's amazing. You just go there, and you take your glasses off, and it takes a photo of you, and okay, go through. Don't even have to. And then you go to the guy. He says, "Are you so-and-so, William Koenig?" I said, "Yes." "Okay, thanks." Didn't even show my passport. Just that quick. I was on a flight to Israel in June. United Airlines out of Dulles. And the lady said, "We're going to be using facial recognition today. We're not going to use your passport or your boarding pass. So if you have that, please give it to the attendant, and the camera will approve you or not." And sure enough, it was so quick. I even looked this one. It caught half my face, and I was approved. It's gotten so good. And, so that's where we're going. No electronic boarding passes, no passport, only a photo of a face. Driver license, facial files, we have that here in Texas and I'm sure other states. But, you know, it's always convenience, security, and use and safety. As I am going through global entry quickly, I see that huge line over there that I used to be in. I don't care. Whatever. They can do whatever they want. But it's so convenient. It's so quick. You just pop right through. And they don't ask any questions. And because they already know who you are. So that's where things are going. Event 201, I'm putting this up again. I have for the last couple of years. But I think Event 201, this was the event that I talk about often. The Event 201 was in New York City. It was October 19, 2019. Bill and Melinda Gates, the World Economic Forum, Rockefeller Foundation, and Johns Hopkins had an event in New York City in the event of a global pandemic. And what do we have about 120 days later? A global pandemic. Oh, just a coincidence. That was also about the time the Wuhan military game started, where we had military people from 100 countries around the world in Wuhan for the military Olympics. And that was probably the original super spreader event, because I read of athletes that had been there, went home, were there in great shape. So they got sick, but not bad, because they were in good health. But this event 201, I mean, look at Gates, World Economic Forum, Rockefeller, Johns Hopkins. I mean, there you go. And then Bill and Melinda Gates are pushing the vaccine development and surveillance. Gates put 10 million plus into Moderna, probably more than that. He also funded a digital tattoo through MIT and Rice University that you could put a black light over a person if they had the digital in their wrist, and that would say, it would show whether they actually had received a vaccine. That's the thing that perplexed them this time. They couldn't prove whether someone had a vaccine or not. So that's where they're going. See, Bill Gates, bless you, injection of operating system into our bodies and the use of viruses in our body as an excuse to update it. And this also is a way to make a work for the back door daily, where they get a lot of other information on us. But injection of an operating system into our body and the use of viruses as an excuse to update it. And then technocracy. They're pushing us towards transhumanism and digital implants. Joe Allen, who's on Steve Bannon's War Room a lot, says that Mark Zuckerberg, the guys that started Google, and others are obsessed with living forever. Obsessed. And that's where we're going. You know, the merging of us into a machine that lasts forever. But that's what we're seeing. I had a friend, Martin Urban, back in 2005 talking about transhumanism. Very few people could even take it at that time. It was pretty intense. Chuck Missler had him on numerous times. It was really, really interesting. He's a German, and he and I did a couple conferences in Germany. We were at a Calvary Chapel, Herborn, right outside of Frankfurt. And it was amazing because Martin is cutting edge, two or three PhDs, did work for the Swiss government, very strong Christian. And these are Germans he's talking to. He started talking about transhumanism, and half the church walked out. They couldn't handle it. It was so... But we're moving quickly into that time of the merging of man and machine. Microsoft. I love how the Lord reveals things. Here we have a patent. The last number is 060606. This happens a lot. The Lord reveals these things to us. It's a system, you take an implant, and if you work 4 or 5 hours, or 8 hours, or whatever, at the end of your workday, it automatically beams up your hours, and that later that afternoon, you receive your currency. And, I mean, this is a Microsoft patent. And a lot of these patents, they could be implemented so quickly. And I think that's the thing with Christians today. A lot of what we'll talk about tonight, some of it will experience, others will not, because everything will fall into place so quick. I mean, if we're here not to fight it, it's going to happen overnight. There won't be any issues. Gates also predicted, this is very interesting, electronic tattoos would replace smartphones. Gates predicted a new type of technology that, among other things, would replace smartphones. Electronic tattoos. Tattoos have become a trend among many people, and the next step in terms of evolution seemed clear to technology developers: bring values to tattoos beyond the sentimental and the aesthetic. You know, I'm amazed. I think 40% of, I think it's 50% of America now. It's 50 or 40. I think 50% of Americans under 40 today have a tattoo. And I know, when we grew up, we didn't see many tattoos. And the ones that had it usually were a sailor that had too much to drink one night and had a Hi Mom tattoo on his arm. And I have a friend that's a Top Gun pilot. I was talking to him recently about it, and he said, you know, a few of our military guys, if they wanted to be promoted, if they had a tattoo, they had to get rid of that tattoo as an officer. And now, unbelievable. How could they, all my age group does not like tattoos. I mean, it's just like, ugh. And now it's like a big thing, you know, body art, or whatever you want to call it. We knew it almost had to do with some kind of final day stuff, you know, mark of the beast, you know, the pain of implants, something. But anyhow, this is the first, as I was putting this PowerPoint, I just saw this yesterday from Gates for the first time. So he's trying to figure out now how to turn those tattoos into something that's effective for his whole electronic agenda. Now, these next few slides are really interesting because technology gives a small group a lot of control. Globalists use technology to move a system of robotics, software, and artificial intelligence. A few people control many with far less headaches. Kind of like Cass Sunstein. I would say he was Obama's good friend. His wife, Samantha Powers, was Obama's UN ambassador. And he had a comment a few years ago, we need to take care of those people that can't take care of themselves. And so that's part of this apparatus. Another friend says, I'm amazed that the World Economic Forum posts all these agenda items. I said, I'm not surprised because they don't see any harm in it. They actually think it's beneficial. And that's the good thing about the revelation. If you want to go find out a lot about what's going, just go to their website. Council on Foreign Relations. I used to hear all that about the CFR for years. They're right across from the White House. I'd go to meetings there. A lot of nice people, probably a lot of Protestants and Catholics. A worldview that wasn't a biblical worldview, but I learned a lot. And they just think they have a better way of how the world should operate. It's really really pretty interesting. You develop a biotech opportunity for people to live 150 years. This is part of the sizzle. Downsize the population. This is the other thing about the virus, the coronavirus and the vaccines, is depopulation. You probably have all read that that's part of the agenda of the jabs in the first place. The more jabs you take, the worse it's going to get. But depopulation is definitely part of it. You know, we have a lot of countries that aren't reproducing. I think you need to reproduce about 2.1 or 2.2 children. And a lot of countries are 1.2, 3.5, 1.6. They're not doing it. So we're going to have a shortage. But and then eventually integrate robots and use them for everything. And that's going to happen too. But
okay.
Hey, Tom.
Time to take a break.
All right. Thanks.
So, 15-minute break, and come back, or you'll get a tattoo.
Microsoft, Amazon, and Leidos have three major cloud contracts. You know, for us to have Amazon and for us to have been on Microsoft, they probably already have a ton of information on us. And according to Catherine Austin Fitz, the Amazon is essentially a CIA contractor. They work with 17 U.S. agencies through Amazon Web Services. And Amazon announced a $5 billion contract with NSA in last year, 2021. And the Department of Defense JEDI, it was a $10 billion contract they gave to Microsoft, and Amazon went to court on it, so now that's split. And so Leidos did a big contract with the Navy. So, I mean, Amazon, Microsoft, they're all part of the government. They have information on everybody, and I'll get to that shortly. But technology is given the ability to institute a complete control system and further centralized economic and political control. Technology gives a small group of people a lot of control. And that's the Davos, World Economic Forum, and some others that I'll talk about. Mr. Global, as Catherine calls it, their central banker's system, transformation challenges. There was a rumor last year, or actually it was the early this part of this year, that there was the central banks had a meeting on the sidelines of the climate control conference in Sweden, and they had agreed to a $130 trillion global workout. It hadn't happened yet, but it's moving in that direction. I don't know how fast. Where all the central banks come together, and okay, this country has this much debt. This country has this much debt. Okay, your country. At some point, maybe they'll just wipe that debt out. I don't know, but that might be part of the overall global reset. And that comment there, essentially all the money in the planet is big, complicated, and messy. So it's messy, but, you know, the Bible talks about the final day, one world currency, one world political order. You know, we're moving in that direction. Right now, we've got the euro. Yeah, we got the BRIC. That's Brazil, Russia, India, and China are talking about having their own currency. Still 60% of world trade's done with the U.S. dollar. But you hear that more and more people are trying to, you know, countries wanting to move away from the dollar. But it's not, right now, the dollar's real strong. Catherine said, how do you herd all the sheep into the slaughterhouse without them realizing and resisting? That's what she said about the Patriot Act after 9/11. You know, we gave up a lot. I mean, even our college liberals at Berkeley and other colleges, whatever, for, you know, security, we'll do whatever. But that was the thing is the Patriot Act. She said under these events like Patriot Act and coronavirus, you can strip a lot of individual rights and privileges. I mean, we have people, I mean, United States, the Democrats are compliant with the vaccine agenda. Republicans are not. And so that's eventually, whenever the rapture is, you can see how the people that are left behind are going to just fall right into place, and all this stuff is going to be in place fairly rapidly. Because the final day infrastructure is being put in place. Despite all these mistakes, besides Trump and Netanyahu and all the mistakes, all we're doing is accelerating final day events. Our presidents have had a major role. We don't have a major role in Bible prophecy, but we do as a facilitator of final day events. Thanks, Tommy. All right. But it's so true. In my book, Eye to Eye, Woodrow Wilson, I went all the way back to Woodrow Wilson. He was the San Remo agreement. FDR was the president that wrote a letter to the king of Saudi Arabia saying if Israel ever wants to become a state, he'll notify him. He put that in writing 7 days later. FDR died in office, replaced by Harry Truman. And then it just all our presidents, everyone, has especially recent ones, have had a role in accelerating final day events despite their mistakes. It's just moving the ball down the course. Digital transhumanism hooked up to the financial system. I've already hit on that with Bill Gates and others, Microsoft. But once everybody is hooked into the three cloud entities, you have the ability to radically engineer how cash flow works. In other words, they can have control over our money. You can literally shut down almost all small businesses and put everybody in a universal basic income, a control system, and run it through the military clouds. We've heard Klaus Schwab said the goal is by 2030 is to have many people on a universal basic income. You give up your property, your assets to the globalists, and then they make sure you get so much money every month.
Bill, didn't they reduce that to 2025 last year?
I don't know, Tommy.
I read that did. They were doing so well.
Wow, that's
their goal is now 2025.
Wow, that's ominous. You know, I've heard that by the end of the second quarter, they're hoping to have the digital currency up and going. But I'll hit that shortly. But I hadn't heard that yet. But that's ominous. Technology gives you the ability to institute a complete control system and further centralized economic and political control. Globalists are now implementing robotics, new tech, to make an enormous difference. You hook everyone into a crypto-type system. We see cryptocurrencies right now really going through a difficult time. We knew that eventually that would happen. But eventually, those alternative currencies will be controlled by the big banks, probably. You'll need a database and a software system and a satellite system will be the key. You'll be able to track and monitor humans and robots 24/7. I'll get into China here shortly. They are really moving far into this. Technocracy is a human and is a natural resource and to be used as such. Create separate civilizations, not part of our civilization. So eventually, with the control of money and life as we know it, that's where they're going with this. Banking giants, the New York Fed, reported a couple weeks ago they're about to start a 12-week digital dollar pilot with the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And that's Citicorp, HSBC, which is a big bank out of Hong Kong, MasterCard, Wells Fargo. These are some of the financial companies participating in this experiment. And I'd heard rumors from some friends since July that, of course, you know, Biden signed a digital currency executive order early in the year, but it was just basically to evaluate the system. But the Fed has been working on a Fed coin for quite a while. What's also interesting about the Federal Reserve, 40% of the home loans now are owned by the Federal Reserve. So, you know, Federal Reserve mortgages, Federal, you know, Fed coin, you see it moving that direction. So, the globalists will have a one-way mirror. They can see you, but you can't see them. They'll just put our name in a computer and then pop up everything and anything they want to as this continues to build. A committee that will run the world. This Hariri's from Israel. He's a dangerous guy. He was in an interview recently it was 2018, by director of Financial Times, and he talked about the future of implants, electronics within us that will be hackable. And the head of the Financial Times was really freaked out, and she's a secular economist. But he was going into some details that was ominous. But tie the financial system and ability to travel into behavior. If you cooperate, if you do good things, you can travel. If you don't, you can't. Most people under 24/7 surveillance anyhow. Their financial incentives and financial powers depend on how well they behave. I'll get into China, but I mean, if they don't like what you say, they could shut your money off. You can only use it at a grocery store. This is Hariri. He's with the World Economic Forum. He's one of Klaus Schwab's top guys. He's an Israeli. He's from Tel Aviv. Yeah, Hariri, H-A-R-I-R-I. Yuval. And there's a lot on him. You can watch his videos online. He's kind of their thinker, one of their real bright thinkers. So that's the idea, is to control people. You know, if you're an activist, a Christian activist, you know, they could say, fine, you can't go. And I'll get, China's doing this already, I mean, to a certain extent. So that's what the purpose is, total control of behavior. And if you come against this, the government or the system, then you're going to be penalized, especially when they control your money. And they can shut off your money, shut off your deposits, shut off where you can spend your money. Universal basic income, just keep the economy going. They could say you've got $3,000 a month. If you don't spend $3,000, we'll take what you don't spend. And there's a lot of things that they could do, nefarious. Majority of people have been supporting and financing it. We're unbeknown to ourselves. It's convenience and security. I love technology. I love what it can do. But if it's in the hands of the wrong people, and again, the people that are standing up against this is Republican conservatives and mostly Christians in America. This would be happening, and I have a friend with a big company in Munich, Cisco, and they're doing a lot of stuff for the EU right now, and he's a Bible prophecy lover, and it's just... There's no one getting in the way of it happening in Europe. It'll happen in Europe very quickly. But in America, we're going to fight it. And I think with the Republican majority is important in the House. I mean, there's 19 conservative attorney generals that are watching this digital currency very closely. I have a friend that's working with them. And these guys will strike. I mean, they're going to come back at it. They're not going to let this just happen. 19 conservative attorney generals in the United States that will fight this. So I don't know, but I tell you, these globalists have things wired. They have the territory very wired. It'll be a battle. I don't know how it'll work, but as long as we're here, there's going to be a battle in the United States. And then again, the GOP have an opportunity here for transparency and where it's going and how we can possibly stop it. Globalists are using technology to move to a system of robotics, software, and artificial intelligence. A few people can control many with far less headaches. Develop biotech opportunities for people to live 150 years. I said that earlier. Downsize the population, integrate robots, and use them for everything. Artificial intelligence is probably one of the scariest. There's a lot of things you can do with it, but it's going to be a real scary thing in the future, what they can do with it. This is... China. I think China, Nathan Jones does a really good, he had a really good teaching on this a while back that I saw in Phoenix last year. And he talked about the social credit scores. And this is, it's serious in China. They're going to basically say, okay, how you can receive points. And how you are taken, there's rewards and punishments. Engaging in charity work, praising the government on social media, donating blood or money, helping the poor. Citizens gain points by doing these things. You go to a bank for a loan, you go to a bank for any kind of business, they look at your social score. It can affect the interest rates you get or the amount of money they'll loan you, on and on. All right, over here, you're not visiting one's aging parents regularly. Insincere apologies for crimes committed. Cheating in online games. Spreading rumors on the internet. You could be docked. Could affect your business. Could affect your relationships with the bankers. All kinds of things. I mean, this is how extremist is getting. Here is the China plan for total control. These are all kinds of different areas, social media, profession, court records, social security, marital status, family planning, tax information, priority, product quality, conduct of staff and management. I mean, this whole apparatus is social credit score. And they're perfecting it in China. I mean, that's obviously going to take a while to get there, but they are so much further than anybody else. And who's watching this? The globalists are watching this. And then even your real estate purchase, phone contacts, online and offline consumer. Let's say you have somebody in your phone contacts that has a bad history. All of a sudden, you get docked, or they want to know who are your friends, especially the activists. I mean, who are you communicating with? That kind of thing. So this is going to be very comprehensive at some point. Oops. Complete digital control of people. That's the purpose. Nearly all used data from social networks or smartphone apps besides sophisticated video surveillance. So we have the facial recognition, the video surveillance, and all the data from the social network postings, Twitter, Facebook, or whatever else we post, or wherever else we go. What are our websites? By 2020, most major Chinese urban public spaces were equipped with facial recognition. That's unbelievable how big China is. President Xi Jinping spoke of the security is the best gift a country can give its people. And this is the pitch. Security. Make yourself feel much more confident in being in your homes. That's right. That's it, Tommy. The issues, the tensions, and the urgent need for unity on climate. A couple weeks ago, we had the G20 meeting, which was a bunch of stuff that they were trying to get America to sign into, World Health Organization, digital passport, digital or vaccine cooperation. At the same time, there was a climate control conference in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt. And the issues, the tensions, and the urgent need for unity on climate. Representative from nearly 200 countries. When we think about all the countries that are compliant to the World Economic Forum, as Schwab said, and to the COP27 agenda, and he also said there were 100 heads of state, joined the business leaders, religious figures, climate experts, local officials. I mean, they are all in. Isn't it interesting? The Republicans in the United States say, climate control is not an issue. We're the ones. We're the activists in America. I mean, and a lot of people around the world are falling right into place on this whole climate control thing, which is all about control, too. At the G20 meeting, the leaders, the top 20 industrial countries in the world, were supporting the World Health Organization's mRNA vaccine technology transfer, as well as the spokes in all regions of the world, with the objective of sharing technology, technical know-how, and volunteer and mutual agree. They want, as I said earlier, they want everybody jabbed. They want to force you to be jabbed. And that's really problematic. And, I mean, just think, right now, all the so-called vaccines, Dr. Peter McCullough says these are not vaccines. Vaccines stop a disease. They stop something. Vaccines, when they go into the deltoid, it stays in the deltoid. The mRNA goes into the deltoid, and 75% goes into every cell in your body. This is a whole different thing. And why are they under emergency use authorization? Because of liability exposure. I mean, we're pumping this in everybody's arms, not everybody, but a lot of people's arms across the country, and they're hiding under liability exposure? Well, Moderna and Pfizer have, the only way that you can get to those guys is through criminal. There's no cover for criminal. And there's some people, Naomi Wolf and others, working on looking at everything that Pfizer and Moderna gave to the government. And here's another thing. We can pretty much go in any country in the world right now and not be required a vaccine. But if we have people from around the world come to the United States, they have to have a vaccine before they come in the U.S. That's terrible. I can go to Australia, New Zealand, I mean, some of the tightest, most difficult, even Canada now. You can go in that country and not be required to take a vaccine, but if you want to come to the U.S., you've got to get jabbed. The Bali leader says, we acknowledge the importance of shared technical standards and verification methods under the framework, which is IHR 2005, to facilitate seamless international travel, interoperability, and recognizing digital solutions and non-digital solutions, including proof of vaccines. That's where they're going with this stuff. We're worried about another coronavirus coming through. I don't know what's going to happen, whether it is or not, but thank God for Omicron. That got our mask off us, and it got through a lot of people quick. That was a blessing, so Omicron. We recognize the importance of digital transformation in the sustainable development goals. I'll get to that here shortly. We acknowledge that affordable, high-quality digital connectivity is essential for digital inclusion and digital transformation. It's all part of the electronic. And this was G20. They had a long communique after that conference. And then another one we're watching closely, we're going to learn a lot more about it, is the Environmental Social Governance Agenda, ESG. This one is a powerhouse. You've got some major, major wealthy companies, BlackRock, Vanguard, State Street, that I'll have some statistics here shortly, but have major influence over Fortune 500 companies and influencing their future. It's environmental, social, and governance, integration of practice of incorporating ESG information into investment decisions to help enhance risk-adjusted returns, whether strategy is a sustainable mandate. And one of the things that they've targeted is natural gas and fossil fuel. I mean, this is what we're seeing right now. These prices are ridiculous, but it's all because of the green energy movement through the operation of ESG. It's interchangeably the sustainable investment stuff. It all sounds so nice and fun and productive and informational, but it's an agenda. ESG data is most often categorized as non-accounting information because it captures components important for variations that are not traditionally reported. I'm going to just kind of go through this, summarize it tonight, but this is something there's a lot going on in this ESG movement. It's affecting, they want to affect every man, woman, and child in this country. And it's all interrelated with all these operations, but it's a big deal. And they want to do ESG scores for companies. And what's happening with these big companies right now, they're getting global climate control people on boards of major companies, Exxon, Chevron, and other companies. But this is their agenda. It's another form of social scoring. You go to a bank, you go to a company, you want to borrow money. Well, what do you do here? What do you do with mission-related investing, ethical investing, ecological green investing? How about sustainable investing or corporate social responsibility? What are you doing in your communities? So socially conscious, aware, our ESG environment, social governance. The same thing they're going to do for the individuals, they're going to do for the companies. And there'll be a rating. There'll be a rating for these companies. So the thing is, this was well said, is break up the ESG investing giants. BlackRock has $10 trillion in assets. Vanguard and State Street are very high into the trillions, too. They effectively control each other and their market competitors. They interrelate. They're into media. That's why the media is so behind us. They put money behind advertisements, so these major media companies. I mean, they got their hands in everything and attempting to influence. The environmental part of it covers themes such as climate risk, natural resource scarcity, pollution, and waste of energy. Well, Exxon, how's Exxon doing? Well, we'll rate Exxon. It'll affect their interest rates, affect the loans they get. Social, include labor issues and product liability risks such as data security, stakeholder opposition, and also gender identity will be in this as well. You know, what your company do when it comes to gender issues. Also, LGBT issues. Governance encompasses items related to corporate governance to behavior, such as board quality and effectiveness. Like here's the one. Okay, environment. Okay, let's say Exxon. How are you doing with climate risk, natural resources, scarcity? How are you handling your assets? Pollution. What are you doing, Mr. Exxon, with your products? Waste, environmental opportunities. So you're going to be rated. Social, here we have the labor issues, product liability, gender diversity, human rights, geopolitical environment. And then governance, the leadership, executive pay. Are you paying your CEOs too much? How about your audits? Have you done audits? How about shareholder rights? Are you enunciating those well enough? So all of this is going to be part of another grading system. And here it is, the laggards, the average, and the leaders in these fields. And just the integration. Of the ESG, not to go into it tonight, but this is so comprehensive. They have thought this out. I mean, this is just part of it. You can go ESG into Google, and this thing is so thought out, and it's an agenda controlled by three major investment companies that I mentioned. And then there you go. Here are the company overview in these areas. So, anyhow, that's it, Tommy. Obviously, there's a lot of things to work on. Like I said, tonight I could go an hour, hour and a half on any one of these, but these are the things that I'm watching. This is final day stuff. God's time clock remains Jerusalem. But at the same time, we're going to have one world order, one world political order, one world religious order. A lot of things are coming together quickly.
So if the rapture were to happen, say, in 6 months, they're ready.
They're ready to
spring into action.
Two things. I mean, there's no one to fight it.
Right.
And number two, it's almost ready.
Yeah, I mean, they stole that election from Carrie Lake. I mean, and she, you know, she's pretty positioned to really do or say something, and she really can't do anything.
Yeah, I was with, last week, I was with a couple of her advisors. I've been in two private meetings with Carrie Lake with fundraisers.
Yes.
And she's tremendous. She
yes.
is fantastic.
Right.
And they stole that right out from underneath her because her big vote comes in the same day. It comes in the last day or the day of election. That's how she won the primary. And that's what everybody thought. She was going to win by 50 to 75,000 based on the same day votes.
Right.
And they kept stringing it out, stringing it out, stringing it out. And I think she's down by 15,000. One of the top guys that was there was working with the attorneys. I said, Brian, what's the chance of this being turned over? He said, 35% at best.
Right.
I said, that's unbelievable.
What's her name who ran against her? Who's
Katie Hobbs.
Katie
Hobbs. Secretary of State.
Secretary of State.
Yeah.
She's threatened to put whoever it is that finalizes the election in jail if they don't do it.
It's outrageous. It's outrageous.
I mean,
you know, Katie Hobbs is Secretary of State. I mean, Arizona, when Trump only lost Arizona by, I think, about 12 or 13,000. And they did a total audit. But that was stopped. See,
right.
that was stopped. They got away with that, too. I mean, nothing. And they've become so effective at stopping these things.
Well, you know, the fact that they stole the last presidential election, you know, the fact that whoever they are, and all those people are in position to do that shows that America is just totally, if they knock off America, we're finished.
Well, yeah, if they knock off the Christian activist Republicans, we're the force. We're the force. Without us, it just falls right into place. Andy?
Can you comment on they call it the Respect for Marriage Act, better named the Disrespect for Marriage Act, and, you know, is this thing going to pass, and if it passes, what's going to be the effect in terms of persecution against Christians in America, and specifically, it's so disconcerting that so many Republicans, you know, got behind that, and it wouldn't have gone anywhere without Republican support. So, I mean, you kind of gave me a little bit more hope in the Republican Party based on some of the things you said, but at the same time, they're jamming through this stuff. You know, they did it after the midterm when there was no accountability.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have any update on that.
Andy, I don't. I've been out of the country for the last 30 days. But I tell you, Family Research Council has been, and with Michelle Bachmann, Tony Perkins, have been on that the most. And you're absolutely right, Andy, with 13 Republicans. I mean, this is a disgrace. And these are rhinos. A lot of these are rhinos. And they're, you know, basically trying to keep the Supreme Court from sending same-sex marriage back to the states, just like abortion. And I just reading the headlines, Andy, and some of the paragraphs, it's just infuriating that any Republican would vote in favor of that. I think it's going to pass. I think it's at the House now, so they'll have to address it, but doggone it, that Senate, because they needed was three votes. I think it was 63 votes. I mean, you're 59. If they could have hit 59, it wouldn't have happened because of the filibuster. But I don't know. It just, yeah, I mean, you got Murkowski back. I mean, Mitch McConnell put his money behind the Rhinos. They're back. And we still need better leadership at the House and the Senate level. McCarthy's not going to get the job done. Jim Jordan's great, but we need a lot more Jims, people like that. So that one is just, that's just asking for judgment on America. That's just calling on more judgment for our country. So
Jim Jordan used to be a Campus Crusade wrestler at one time, and so he's a real
Jim Jordan
fighter.
Lost one fight or lost one match in 3 years of being an NCAA champ. I mean, he's not that one match. I mean, he is. I love the guy. He is a great Christian. Loves Israel. He's a prince. That's interesting.
He is. I spoke at a church in his district about 9 months ago, and boy, were they they're proud of him. You know, they loved him.
They love him. I'll take on a couple of those Democrats, knock their heads.
You're a Washington insider. We really appreciate you, brother. I'm so glad that you've been a part of this group for all these years.
Thank you.
It really is the highlight of our time here. Okay, so this is the hard question. We all pretty much believe that Biden is not really in control, and neither was Obama. We believe people behind the scenes were telling them what to do. Besides just the Democratic Party itself, who do you know of that's actually the one pulling the strings?
I think George Soros. I think George Soros has, you know, with the 253 media organizations, that's huge. I think he is also an investor behind Snopes, so anytime they come up with something, they say, oh, no, that's just propaganda. But I think Obama still has influence. I heard that right after Biden took office, Obama gave him 50 executive orders. It looked like Obama executive orders because their focus was on transgenderism and LGBT the first 48 to 72 hours in office. So that's something he would do. Yeah, he is an obsession with that. I feel that Obama gloats at what's happening in our country because of that agenda and how divisive it is, even in the church. Bill Gates has a lot of influence. He's pretty masterful. There's some other wealthy Democrats behind the scenes. Rockefeller Foundation, World Economic Forum. I mean, there's Rothschilds in the UK when it comes to money.
We all imagine that there, besides the rich actors and these people you've mentioned, we all imagine the nine or whoever these super rich people are that nobody knows their name. Is there any truth in that? Or
I don't know. It's interesting. Is Mondo Gonzalez has done a great writing on the Ten Kings. And I love it because he talks about the leaders of Google, the leaders of Apple. Then you've got the Gates, Microsoft, and a lot of these, Musk maybe to a certain extent, and then BlackRock, and then State Street, Vanguard, Larry Fink, and Schwarzman with Blackstone. You know, these guys, let me put it this way. Coronavirus increased the net worth of the Amazon, Bezos for sure, of these companies by $10 trillion. That's on top of what they were already worth. I mean, they've taken some hits, they have, but they have so much money. And those ESG companies have so much money. I think, Mondo did a great job on that when he really went through comprehensively of the influence of these 10 earthly kings. Not the European kings, but there's a lot of sense to that. And there's probably people behind the scenes. There have been for years. Prince Charles, now King Charles, we've been watching him for a long time. And his influence with the green agenda. And earlier this year, he said something about, we can paraphrase him, but pretty much redo everything. It's going to cost us trillions, but that's what we should do.
So we could safely say maybe that we don't need any hidden people to be doing all this when we got some that are right out in the open doing it.
Absolutely. Plus, like I said earlier, just read go to the World Economic Forum website, read Council on Foreign Relations website, and you can get quite an education on what these guys are doing and connect your own dots. Yes, sir.
Hi. In the beginning of your speech, you were giving the impression everything Americans do something wrong, God has to come and punish them with a storm or something.
No, it has to do with, well, it's the Israel land. It's,
okay.
Yeah.
It's, so, well, my question is there a way that we can pray to God that when he sends a storm, it goes above the White House and the Capitol instead of our house?
That's for sure. Instead of Texas, or
I'm asking for a friend.
Well, this is an interesting one. I got to share this. This is great. I was in 2019. I was in Israel for the Christian Media Summit, and a friend of mine from North Carolina was with the lieutenant governor, and another friend, Earl Cox, was from South Carolina. So all three of us put a note on the wall for that hurricane season to spare Texas, North Carolina, and South Carolina and for the 2020 season. And if you all remember, we had three or four come right at Texas and shifted to the last minute and hit Louisiana. And I have some good friends there, Tony Perkins and others. I'm going, you know, we should have put one in there for Louisiana, too. It literally happened. And then I was talking to a friend today, she was having, she and her husband were having trouble having a child. She was in fertility medicine, and she's in the jewelry business, and she's got these two brokers, Jewish diamond brokers from Tel Aviv, that put a note in the wall that she would become pregnant, and she was 45. Within months, she got pregnant and had triplets. Yeah, I mean, and her children just got out of A&M and Baylor. So, I mean, that wall, I'm telling you, that's what Charlie Crist did with Florida for all those years, when Florida from 2004 didn't have any hurricanes. They got clobbered in 18, you know, but 19, DeSantis put a note in the wall, and Hurricane Dorian was coming right in southern Florida and just right at West Palm Beach and went up the coast. I don't know what it is. But
so what did they not do on this last one?
Well, they forgot to put the note in the wall.
Oh,
and the last one had a total Israel connection. I'll just run through it quickly. It's pretty amazing. Let's see. It was September. Okay, September 14th. Biden's got his person in the Middle East saying, we are getting ready to push the two-state plan. And the next morning, tropical depression became Fiona began. Okay, so Fiona goes, it hits Puerto Rico and starts coming this way, and then it starts to head toward Bermuda. Okay, so Biden is at the UN on the 20th saying, we are totally two-state, that's our total commitment to two-state. He pressured Lapid from Israel. No Israeli prime minister has ever said publicly supports two-state at the UN. Lapid did that on the 21st. And that evening, Biden and Trudeau from Canada both congratulated Lapid for making those statements, and this was necessary for the two-state plan. Fiona was going towards Bermuda and turned at the last second and hit eastern Canada, Nova Scotia, the most intense hurricane they've ever experienced in the eastern part of the state. Right after Trudeau said that. I mean, you can see the meteorologist reports. And then, 24 hours later, Ian developed. And in the day that Ian's going to be third or fourth most intense storm in history. And the day that Biden's UN ambassadors at the Security Council saying it's time to move forward with the two-state plan, Ian came ashore just a few hours after that. And that's the way these storms, I mean, you know, these are the mysteries of the Bible, as I talked earlier. But the Western Wall, if you have any needs, call your friends or whoever's there, put it in the wall, because it has quite a history. Yes, sir.
Thanks, Bill, for doing this. I'm of the belief that I don't think we're getting our government or our country back. And in a way, I welcome that, because maybe we're going to check out of here a little bit faster, which is always good. However, you've been in this, you know, a government watchdog for a long time, and I watched a lot of these sessions in Congress where Republican senators and lawmakers will just grill and skewer these guys, you know, like Mayorkas, for example, and they just have them dead to rights, and it's like, okay, but nothing ever happens. You know, just Mayorka sits up there and, you know, basically no answer, and Fauci, same thing. And so while I'm encouraged that we took the House back, and what you were talking about earlier about Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and Fauci, they're about to be grilled, I see the grilling that goes on now, and there's the clock runs out and they go away and nothing ever happens. Do you see anything different?
Well, that's a great point. And I tell my activist friends the last 20 years, things have not gotten better. We just keep plugging the holes in the dam when they break. You know, what's gotten better? And if it wasn't for the activists, it'd really be bad. We'd really be under judgment. We're under judgment in the true context. But, no, I think, unfortunately, we're at that point right now. All we're doing is plugging in holes, trying to stop the dam from breaking. And things keep getting worse and worse until the Lord comes for us. So I think in some ways a lot of, you know, and this was interesting about the midterm election, because a lot of people were hoping that the Republicans are going to win it back, 50 to 100 seats, and we're going to turn things around. Well, we have a lot of judgmental issues on us as a nation. And there's no unity with the Democratic Party. That's the other thing. They want us to unify with the Democratic Party. It's impossible because of their sin agenda, because of what I shared tonight. So I think the optimism is just trying to maintain and maybe stop the inevitable that will happen as soon as we're out of here.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Joe?
This is under the category of conjecture, speculation, and rumor.
Go ahead.
You hear about tribunals and that the military, that Austin and Millie are not really the ones in charge, but some maverick elements are.
Unfortunately, I think they're in charge.
Yeah, okay. All right. So it remains under the category of conjecture, speculation, and rumor. Yeah.
Yeah, I tell you, Joe, we hear this stuff from time to time, and, you know, these guys are worried about critical race theory and jabbing our soldiers. You know, it's just disgusting. I mean, look at the Afghan debacle. That was such a debacle. I mean, it almost had to be on purpose. It could be that. I mean, stupid. I mean, how do you do something so pathetically stupid like that and then leave the Bagram Air Force Base with $50 billion worth of equipment that the Chinese will take over soon so they can get to their rare earth minerals?
Yeah.
I mean, it's so disgusting. And then, the fact that Iraq right now has, Chinese and Russian oil companies making the money. We're here from Bush and everybody. We'll just take the Iraqi oil and pay for our $4 or $5 trillion that we spent in Iraq and Afghanistan. So, Trump had a good military there. He was building it up like Reagan. These guys are frustrating. It's frustrating. They're really a joke. And,
with so many on YouTube and Rumble, and you get booted off YouTube.
Well, there's
so much stuff out there.
Well, there's a lot of wild stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of wild stuff. You know how that is, Joe. You know, we've been seeing this stuff for years about CFR, but I don't know. I think a lot of it's overactive imaginations. And it's just not happening. I mean, sure, there's some stuff. There's no doubt. I mean, this coronavirus, there's a lot that's going to come out, and I pray it all comes out about the whole thing, about Fauci and the funding of the Wuhan lab, and all the way they got around it and stuff like that. Yeah, I hope it comes out, but unfortunately right now, I mean, what are our enemies looking at? They're looking at the United States with a weak military. We got a president that's not sure where he is, probably more than half the time. And I don't know. It's just, I guess the question here, I think the China-Taiwan move, which could have significance because 90% of the world's semiconductors are made by Taiwan Semiconductor, the sophisticated ones. China's probably going to do something by 2024 before Biden's out of office or whatever happens. So these are some things. I mean, Iran, I mean, I think that Iran is getting really close to doing something with Israel. I'm not sure when. They're very smart. They're very smart people, too. But I think as prophecy people, there's a lot of things that could trigger at any time. They could set things. I mean, Dmitry Dudeman, David Wilkerson saw missiles hitting New York City years ago. That's plausible. But as what happened with 9/11, our security in America, our homeland security is the God of Israel. He's the one that secures us. And there will be a day that he lifts his restraining hand, and it might be after we're all gone. And it won't be pretty then. Yes, ma'am.
I have a trillion-dollar question. COP26, yes. Prince Charles, who is the gentleman who has trillions at his disposal? What's your theory?
Say that what, a little bit louder.
Oh, I'm sorry. At COP26,
yes.
Prince Charles at that time indicated a gentleman who had trillions at his disposal.
Oh, my.
Any theory about who you think that is with your...
I think it's probably a combination of people.
Okay.
I don't think anybody, as far as I know, no one has a trillion yet, but it could be a combination of Prince Charles's friends. And, you know, it's interesting. It was he was the defender of the faith. That's his responsibility and his role as Prince Charles. He said, I'm a defender of all faith. He's loved by the Muslims. He's been to Saudi Arabia. He's done the sword dancing and all that stuff. They love him. So he's got that guy. I know a guy, Tim Cohen, wrote a book, The Antichrist and the Cup of Tea, back in 1998, thinking that he might be the candidate. It's about that thick. It's pretty comprehensive. I heard him interviewed recently. I don't know if he's the type and shadow of the Antichrist. Yeah, Prince Charles, George Soros, even though he's about 92 now, Hariri, maybe somebody, you know, there in Israel, but Prince Charles is someone to watch. And I tell you, following him, watching him, Googling him, he's a first-rate globalist.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one more little question. As Christians, what can we do against this? I mean, can we start an organization that fights this, or are we too late for that?
The big part of our problem is the other part of the church. We have, in 2004, the Lord put my heart, add up how many people attend replacement theology churches. In 2004, we had 100 million people attending replacement theology churches in the United States. 65% of the church is replacement theology. They are also wrapped up in social justice. You know, they talk about, you know, helping with all these causes, but they never get to the root, which is sin. So there's a parallel between replacement theology and social justice. And I remember when I moved to Washington, D.C. almost 21 and a half years ago, a guy that discipled me said, one day, the other part of the church is going to be our biggest threat.
Well, that's already started.
That's powerful. You know, and when you look at, you got over half the Protestants and over half the Catholics favor same-sex marriage. An LGBTQ agenda. That's the big problem for the church. That's what's splitting churches. So, you know, the evangelicals have to continue to support each other, keep, you know, taking the strong stands when we have the opportunity to. And we're a minority in the church, as far as I know. But we just have to continue to encourage each other, maintain and just stand, maintain and pray and hope. But at the same time, we're also blessed because we're the part of the church that understands the biblical significance of the days that we live in. You know, that's significant. We know what to follow. God gave us His Bible, His handbook on what to follow, and we understand it. So,
you're
still the Great Commission.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, that's, you know, that's what we're, you know, that's right, Tommy.
So
that's,
your advice is to go preach and save some souls? And
I was thinking about that today. I usually try to say that, you know, this is an opportunity for us. There's going to be tougher times. People are going to come up and say, how can you be joyful in a time like this? And you tell them about Jesus. I even heard the other day, TikTok, one of the hot topics in TikTok is the rapture term. I haven't confirmed that yet, but that was from a pretty good source. So, you know, there's still going to be opportunities. So we keep praying for family. Keep praying for people that God puts in your life. Ready to share the gospel. Let the Holy Spirit, just like what Dr. Peter McCullough says, After all those interviews, he finally, when he speaks, when he goes on national TV, he prays before he gets on, Lord, speak through me. He prays during advertisements, Lord, speak through me. Just, I think we need to be sensitive. My wife, my lovely wife is with Jesus now, used to always say, you know, just let the Holy Spirit lead you when you're sharing the gospel. There's opportunities, and I think God's going to give us so many more opportunities. And that's really what we're getting people ready for. Because I just like what we discussed earlier, we're not going to turn anything around. We can be activists. We can do what we can to maintain our life the best we can in a very difficult time. But I really think, the lost loved ones, lost friends, lost people that God puts in front of your life each day, and encourage others to do the same.
Well, God must be at work, because I just read that 400 United Methodist Church are breaking up from their organization.
Yeah. That's right. The Methodists have had
because
splits.
Of the LGBTQ stuff.
Well, I think the Presbyterians have had two or three splits.
Mm-hmm.
Methodists have. ELCA is pretty liberal, I think. I'm not positive. Episcopal Church, where I grew up, it's just diminishing. There's hardly any Episcopal Church left. But, there's going to be a change. I don't know. I keep saying, we're here at a prophecy-oriented conference. We're just so blessed to understand it, because so few people do. I added, the 100 million American churchgoers, replacement theology, they don't know about the rapture. They don't know about the end times. They don't know about Jerusalem. And it's a billion people worldwide attend church that don't understand the biblical significance of the day.
Christendom is the largest religion in the world. In other words, Christendom refers to anything related to Christianity, including the cults and Catholicism and Eastern Orthodoxy and liberal Protestantism. Sometimes they'll say Islam is. No, that particular survey left out South America. Talk about something interesting. Brazil, 40 years ago, had 10% Protestants. They're up around 45%.
Oh, yeah. I know
a
lot of...
That's why that guy got elected,
That's why Bolsonaro got elected. That's exactly right.
And, of course, Lula has to steal it. That's a stolen election.
Right. Lula, it was 67%. I watched the vote from the beginning because we were down there, and it hit 67%, and that's when the algorithms took off. That's where
just like here.
And then Lula's getting most of the votes, and Bolsonaro just a little bit. That's exactly right, Tony.
Right.
But there are a lot of believers in Brazil. It's very encouraging. The pastor's on fire for the Lord. It's been a significant movement of the Lord in Brazil.
Oh, and they love Israel.
Yes.
I mean, they go to Israel a lot and all of these kinds. I've been there six times.
Wow.
I think, over the years.
They're
amazing. I go to these conferences. I have 2,500 people there.
Huge conference.
I used to. Not going to go anymore,
do.
But yeah.
They still do. I mean, it's incredible what the Lord's done in Brazil. So it's encouraging, like South Korea. Hopefully that'll happen in other countries in South America. But the problem there is there are socialist Marxists that control those other countries.
Yeah, South Korea is fading.
Yeah.
Fading. they were once the highest percentage of Christians in the world. But you know who the fastest growing two countries are, don't you? I can't think of them, but they're Muslim countries.
Well, Bangladesh, or no, not Bangladesh,
no.
Indonesia, or?
No, not Indonesia. Well, Indonesia has been going
200 million
for a long time, but no, it's they're both Middle Eastern countries. Iran has had strong Christianity building for the last 50 years. They estimate at least minimum 3 million evangelical Bible-believing Christians in Iran. You know, they just have a stranglehold over them there. But, some of those oil-producing things. But, I went to Saudi Arabia for 2 weeks and in the year 2000. And they have all of these workers from all over, the Philippines and Indonesia, and almost all of them are Christians. We'd go into like a Burger King or something, and we'd start talking to the workers who weren't natives, and they're all Christians. And they said, yeah, we hold Bible studies about every other day, and, you know, if they catch us, they send us out, and somebody else comes in and replaces them.
Yeah.
But that was, the year 2000, and so the Lord's always
He's everywhere.
Doing his thing.
Yeah,
and
he is everywhere.
The the American military engagement in the Middle East brought a lot of Christianity over there, you know.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is, 9/11, when 9/11 happened, 7 out of 10 Americans were depressed, some clinically. They were depressed, and it was a wake-up call. Rushed back to the church, only to leave shortly thereafter. Coronavirus, I thought in some ways that was going to be a judgment and a great opportunity for the gospel, but there's so much money was thrown at our country, it never materialized, so it kind of got people through the tough time until things got better. I don't know, I wonder sometimes if there's going to be something cataclysmic while we're still here. I know the rapture will be definitely cataclysmic.
You think?
Third world country overnight. I mean, we're the Christians are still the foundation of this country. So that I don't know. I don't know if we're going to have if Wilkerson and Dudeman are right and New York gets hit by a nuke. I mean, hits our financial district. I mean, things could change. I mean, that's the black swan that we have every once in a while. But
isn't that called urban renewal?
In New York's case, it would be. thank you. Yes, sir.
When Israel strayed from God's plan, they experienced famines as punishment. How close could America be, the land of plenty, to a scenario like that?
Yeah. It's interesting. Famine, and I think famine and fire and heat. The pattern there is social issues. California's had some serious, I don't even have to go into detail because I'll get picked up by right-wing watch again, but you look at the fires and the drought, where are they? Where are they the worst? And it's usually around the time of some of their legislature's decisions on social issues. And I think that would precipitate, I think that, as far as that, and I think it'll get a lot worse once we're gone, but we're in it right now. I mean, Arizona, Lake Mead, Lake Powell, I mean, they're going through a serious drought in parts of California. So I don't know.
I think there's some really interesting things that technology has done to agriculture to change it in people don't realize.
Yeah, that's true.
1% of the American population is who grows the food now in America.
Yeah, why is Bill Gates buying these massive farms and Chinese
He's buying massive amounts. The amount that he owns is really insignificant.
It is.
As far as agricultural production.
Right.
He's making a big deal about it. But also the technology of control that you talk about with the machinery that is used today, the ability to stop the process is very real.
Well, here in Holland, second largest exporter of food in the world. A third of the farms are being shut down, bought out because of nitrogen. But they're going to reopen their coal plants because they're not getting enough fuel from Russia. But that, I mean, the attack, I mean, how about all these plant fires in the United States this
right.
year?
Yeah.
You know, how about those?
Why does no one ever talk about who's doing them? You never hear a word.
Yeah.
Who's doing this?
Yeah.
And so do you have an opinion?
Well, I don't. Mainstream media certainly won't touch it. They'll never go there. Some of these are strange electrical fires. I'm sure, Tommy, there's some people that follow that. I haven't seen it. But, again, even if you prove it, it doesn't go anywhere. Typically, you can't stop.
Well, yeah, they're bombing a bunch of pro-life places. I don't know the number, 30, 40 of them have been bombed in
something
the last
like
year.
That. But mainstream media will never cover it. Our media is conservative media is pretty small, but the attack on the food is really problematic, and that's part of the depopulation plan of the globalists. That will be something that they do because, I mean, the price of food, I mean, you know, as we know, gas and natural gas and oil is in everything we have, everything we own. That's the main source of inflation right now. That's why we have inflation. And that just, that is terrible for countries that are poor that need food products. The attack on the food right now is problematic. I know I haven't spent a lot of time on it, but I've read enough where if someone put a lot of time into it, it's almost like it's a conspiracy that's not a conspiracy, that it's true. And there's an attack on our food supply.
Any other questions or comments? Here we go. Yeah, move that microphone down.
I'll try. Okay, there. Besides Bill Gates, but he is one big one, buying up to control our food supply and now the water supply. But we only need like 50% of the population to get the jab because of the spike protein shedding for the rest of us. But also they're developing ways to get it to us through aerosols and the food supply. I don't know about the water supply, if they're doing it that way.
Plausible.
Yeah. So even if you try to avoid the jab, you'll still get the vaccine in some way from it. But what I'm standing up here to ask you is, where are the resources from your wife's talks?
Oh, thank you.
So that I can, I'd like to avail myself, because I heard her one time, and it was incredible.
Thank you. SoulSavior.org. It's the King James Version, SoulSavior, SavIour.org. And thanks to Bob Ulrich and one of his, there's three teachings that Claudia did on soul winning. And there's some great, and also a lot of the people she led to Christ, she put the stories up. And she always said there's reapers and sowers, reapers and sowers. So that site is there to encourage us. And in a lot of those articles, you'll see a story that you had your own personal experience in. But SoulSavior.org, three teachings at Bob Ulrich's Prophecy Watchers Conference, and then a lot of stories.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh, thank you.
So, Bill, what are you doing in your ministry? You say you've traveled here and gone here and done that. I know you've got your weekly report and things.
Yeah, thanks, Tommy. I still put out, we post news every day out of the year, watch.org. And then, thank you. And then I put out a weekly news report, World News that was biblically relevant on Friday. I've got Jim Fletcher writing with me, Bill Wilson, okay. And some great content. And then I write something. And I speak a fair amount. I'm doing more and more on Zoom, which is great, but I'm traveling a lot. We're also activists. We do a lot of behind-the-scenes things. That's why I've been in Brazil, Israel. We try to do what we can as activists to make people aware in positions of influence what's happening. So that's another component of what we do. And I'm fortunate to have a network of other brothers and sisters in Christ, mostly brothers around the world that are watchmen, and we stay in contact all the time. So we just, you know, share our notes with just trying to keep people informed. I mean, our website, watch.org, we've been online since for 26 years, and that our purpose is to keep people informed and also what to pray about.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tommy.
Well, thank you. I guess we'll shut this down.